Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Time to take another of our periodic looks at some of the things going on in labs today that may wind up being part of our world before we know it tomorrow. As we've mentioned on previous programs, there's a lot of work going on in labs aimed at eventually being able to allow machines to read minds. Everyone from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, to universities, to commercial labs are getting in on the act. The motivation varies, from identifying potential terrorists at airport checkpoints, to marketing to people more effectively, to enabling those with severe disabilities to communicate better. A recent example of this trend comes from Intel, the computer chip maker. This particular initiative uses functional MRI scans to try to ascertain what someone is thinking about in real time. Using the term thinking in this context may be slightly misleading, since all the computer software has been able to do so far is to guess which of two words a person was thinking of. This is a long way from being able to tell if a person is thinking of truth, justice, and the American way, what they had for supper last night, or the great concert they went to last year. But in the limited sphere this initiative is working on, the software does pretty well analyzing scans of brain activity as people think of words. In fact, the computer guessed right 90% of the time in deciding which of two words subjects were thinking about. That's pretty impressive, even if only a tiny first step on the way to a new world, one in which we may or may not be comfortable in. The Intel folks, of course, are looking at this technology as having great, very positive potential. One immediate application, when the technology matures more, might be to let those with severe disabilities communicate more effectively. Further on down the road, in the words of an Intel researcher, quote, "The vision is being able to interface to information, to your devices, and to other people without having an intermediary device," end quote. Basically, that means that we'd be able to think something and have it happen without having to take any physical action ourselves, even opening our mouths. That one may take a few minutes to digest. It sounds like science fiction come home to roost. But these days, it's a lot more science and a lot less fiction. And speaking of science fiction, there's going to be a new astronaut on the International Space Station in 2010, although this astronaut won't eat anything or need to use the space toilet. Robonaut is a 300-pound humanoid robot that will be sent up to the space station and will stay there permanently. John Olson of NASA explained that, quote, "The partnership of humans and robots will be critical to opening up the solar system and will allow us to go farther and achieve more than we can possibly even imagine today," end quote. We can only hope that this robot, and others that will follow over the years, have been schooled in Isaac Asimov's Three Laws for Robots. A little closer to home, researchers are working to protect implanted medical devices like pacemakers. You may recall that we discussed on a previous program that medical devices such as pacemakers or implanted insulin pumps can be essentially hijacked wirelessly. 2 years ago, researchers discovered that, using just off-the-shelf radio and computer equipment, they could access personal information from a pacemaker and take control of it to modify heart rhythms and even induce heart failure. So, scientists are trying to figure out how to protect these devices implanted in human bodies from outside attacks. The most obvious solution, making a password necessary to access the device, turns out not to be a very good one. Picture an unconscious patient and an ambulance crew hunching over him or her, trying to figure out what the password is so they can provide life-saving care. Although there have been no cases of these kind of attacks actually taking place so far, researchers are concerned and are letting the FDA know that there is a potential problem. Stay tuned as work progresses. Speaking of security, we've often looked at the spreading use of RFID tags in our culture on previous programs as well. Passports and some credit cards are obvious examples. We carry these things, which contain important personal information, right in our pockets. And despite government and corporate assurances to the contrary, there have been numerous examples of researchers being able to access these RFID chips and steal the information they contain, or in some cases, even duplicate the chips. In theory, a duplicated chip could be used to, for example, create a new passport with your information and someone else's picture. Think of the forged passports recently used in the assassination of a Palestinian official in Dubai by what appears to be Israeli Mossad agents using phony passports of real British citizens. Protecting RFID chips continues to be a major security problem. So far, the only way to protect access to the chips seems to be to enclose them in a lead envelope. Effective, but not convenient or elegant. At the recent Computer-Human Interaction, or CHAI, conference, one researcher from the University of Calgary, working with Microsoft Labs, demonstrated four possible ways to make RFID chips more secure. One would make the chip turn on a light or make a sound if it was being accessed, so at least you'd know what was going on, even if you couldn't stop it. A second approach creates controllable tags. A user would have to press a button or hold the tag in his hand to make it work. Another option is to make the tag sensitive in some way. For example, the tag could be made light sensitive so it wouldn't work if it were in a wallet or a pocketbook. Finally, tags could be made proximity sensitive so that they'd provide only part of their information until they got very close to or directly against an RFID reader. While all of these approaches are interesting, at present they're impractical because they need equipment that's relatively large, RFID tags are microscopically small, and battery-powered. So for the present, RFID tags in our pockets will still be readable at a distance with all the potential pitfalls that that fact entails. But it is nice to know that at least some researchers recognize the problem and are working to come up with a solution that will keep the benefits of RFID technology and minimize the dangers. And that, come to think of it, is pretty much what we hope for, too. And we'll try to keep following what's happening in labs, good and bad, on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.